Each year, the Passover demonstrates God's mercy to each one of us. And with that mercy comes an expectation to we actually do what God wants us to do. And we read about this expectation in Exodus 20 and verse 6. In Exodus 20 and verse 6, we read, "But showing mercy to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments." It's pretty important because that's where the mercy gets extended to. We read the same thing in Deuteronomy 5:10 and Deuteronomy 7:9. Deuteronomy 7:9, it says, "And for 1,000 generations," that's a long time, "for those who love God and keep his commandments," that mercy is extended. So this mercy has an expectation that goes with it. And we read about this in the Pentateuch in Exodus and Deuteronomy. Then let's step forward into the time of Nehemiah. And this would be almost 1,000 years later. In Nehemiah 1 and verse 5. And Nehemiah then reflects the same approach in Nehemiah 1:5. "And I said, I pray, Lord God of heaven, O great and awesome God, you who keep your covenant and mercy with those who love you and observe your commandments." So we see those two things go together. Love and keeping commandments, and God extends mercy to those people because he knows they're trying. They're making a responsible effort. We read this in the prophet Daniel in Daniel 9:4, who uses the same terminology about extending the mercy of God to those who love him and who keep his commandments. So we have this principle. So we have love, keeping the commandments, and the extension of mercy. So mercy is then connected with our willingness to do what God says. I find it interesting that the people outside of God's church, they want and expect God's mercy, but in the same or the next breath, they discount or disregard any of God's commandments. Oh, I want mercy from the consequences of my own actions, but I don't think we should have to do all of that stuff, you know? And so today, the title of this message is 10 Ways to Show Love. 10 Ways to Show Love. First, I want to take a look at why we should show love, and then we'll take a look at the how we show love. It's one thing to say it. It's another thing to actually do it. Now, to those whom God has given his Spirit, their heart is then stricken by what God says in John 14:15. And we read this often in Passover. In John 14:15, "If you love me, keep my commandments." Pretty succinct, very short verse. What is that? Seven words. "If you love me, keep my commandments." Pretty good. So our love for God and his commandments should flow forth naturally from us. Just as water bubbles up from a spring, then as we love God, we keep his commandments. Now, of course, we also read there's something in it for us. Because we're imperfect, we can ask God for mercy. We go a couple verses past that in John 14:21, and we read what Christ said, "He who has my commandments and keeps them," it's not enough to have them on your wall, "and keeps them, it is he who loves me." That's one way to show your love for God, is to keep his commandments. "And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." So Jesus Christ will make himself known to those people who love God and keep his commandments. Let's go two more verses in John 14:23. Jesus answered and said to him, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him." So we read those verses in John 14 about how the love of God is connected then to the keeping of his commandments. And that, of course, today is the last day of unleavened bread. It's an annual holy day, which God has commanded. So we are showing our love to God by following up, keeping the days of unleavened bread, following up by meeting as a congregation on the last day of unleavened bread. And now, what did Jesus Christ say when he summarized this in John 13 and verse 34? And these are verses that we read recently during Passover. John 13:34, A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. That's some pretty big shoes to fill. We have to love others the way Jesus Christ loved us. Next verse in John 13:35. By this, all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. You know, those race drivers have little patches on their suits. You can tell who sponsors the race car drivers, right? Who's got the patch on our suit in life? And this is what we're looking at. God says there's a little patch on your race car suit. And it is, people are going to know who sponsors your life. And so we have this, if you are my disciples, if you have love one for another. And then he clarifies it in John 15:12. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. So this is his last night before the crucifixion. And he's giving these instructions. This is what's going to carry you forward. This is how it's going to demonstrate your love for the truth. Well, when we think of love, that's a nice thought. But what is love really? Well, what comes to mind? Well, songs and books are written about romantic love. It's the love of a mate or a prospective mate. You know, that's very common. People think of romantic love. I know that when my grandfather was courting my grandmother, it was the horse and buggy era. And he was stayed up late. It was about 7 miles from home, swinging on the front porch swing. And he stayed up and everybody else went to bed. And the horse and the horse got tired and went home and left him stranded 7 miles away at night in the dark. It was summer, fortunately. And he wasn't going to wake up his future father-in-law and say, can I borrow a horse to go home? So as my father and grandfather told the story, that he walked home in the dark that night, and he got home by the time chores were starting in the morning, so his dad would not be getting after him. But that romantic love, they just stayed up late on the swing. Then there's brotherly love. We have that kind, where it's family love. It's either a personal family member, or it could be a church family member. And the loss of one of those hits us the hardest when we lose somebody that's close to us. And each one of us can tell a story of how that has hit our lives in that sense, somebody who is close to us. Then we have neighborly love. You know, we listened to Mr. Lambert's sermon some while ago about the difference between brothers and neighbors. Well, the neighborly love means a level of care for those around us. And 9 times in the Bible says we're to love our neighbor as ourselves. That's a pretty high standard of looking at care, meaning being helpful, being considerate, having understanding, avoiding contention. I was talking to my atheist uncle this morning, who called on the telephone. He doesn't understand it's a holy day. He thinks I'm off to work here pretty soon. And he was saying how he doesn't know any of his neighbors. He recognizes a couple of them. He doesn't know them other than by sight, doesn't know who they are, any of that. And then we reflected on our childhood. We knew all the neighbors and their parents and their kids. And I went to a one-room country school, as did my uncle. And all of the people in the school knew all of the school board members. And the school board members knew all of the kids. They knew all of the parents. And you had virtually no discipline issues, because you're in trouble at school, you're in trouble at home for a good reason. Everybody knows everybody. And so you have this this level of consideration that was very important, but we've lost that as society has brought people into bigger and bigger cities. And we find now less neighborliness. It's still there, but it's not as historically as it's been. There's another category of love called self-love. I'm going to differentiate that and call it self-care as opposed to selfishness, as opposed to self-hate. We see the world is filled with self-hate, whether it's rainbow-colored hair, body modification, and you see all kinds of that nowadays. And stop me before I tell you examples. There's a lot of body modification going on. that people are not taking care of themselves physically. They don't take care of themselves mentally. They certainly don't take care of themselves spiritually. Don't see the value that they have to God or what their purpose for in society is. So they don't have a strong enough level of self-care, of self-love. But that is an important kind. So by taking good care of ourselves, it puts us in a position then to be able to help others, to be able to love others as ourselves. If we don't love ourselves, how can we show love to others? Christ gave us that commandment to show our love to others. Well, all of these kinds of love can be incorporated then into our understanding of godly love. And anyone can talk about love, but the real issue becomes a matter of how do we demonstrate love? So today, I'm going to go through the 10 ways to show love, but first I'd like to tell you what the benefits are. What's the benefit? In James 5, verses 19 and 20. In verse 5, verses 19 and 20. Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. Ooh, well, that's kind of good. But I do want you to make sure that you understand that in James 5:19, if you're helping somebody to live a better life, to have a better understanding of the truths of God, that covers the sins of both persons, both the person you are helping, who would otherwise have gone astray, and the one who helped turn the sinner from the error of his ways. So it's something good in it for both parties. Then I want to turn to 1 Peter in 4, 1 Peter 4, starting in verse 7. And 1 Peter 4 in verse 7. But the end of all things is at hand, therefore be serious and watchful in your prayers. That's particularly important today when we see how quickly things can deteriorate on the world scene. Verse 8, and above all things, have fervent love one for another, for love will cover a multitude of sins. I guess that doesn't apply to anybody here because you don't have a multitude of sins to worry about. But say for everybody else who does have a multitude of sins, these would be important verses, right? Verse 9, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. As each one has received a gift, minister to it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. So it's indicating here that we all have some kind of gift or gifts, and we are responsible then to use those gifts to help other people, and by so doing, there's something in it for us. It's covering a multitude of sins, not just ours, but it helps the other person whom we're speaking it. Verse 11, if anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him do it with the ability which God supplies, that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom the glory and the dominion forever and ever. So there's something in it for us. And I think covering a multitude of sins probably appeals to everybody. If they're converted, they have the Spirit of God indwelling in them, they have a level of self-care, a level of self-interest, and saying, you know what, I would really want to be among the first fruits of God, and the way to do this, do what God says. So let's take a look at 10 ways, then, to show love. And the interesting that the Bible gives us more than this. I'm just putting 10 down. You can probably find a lot more, and you may have a slightly different list in mind or expanded on. But the first one is listen without interrupting. In Proverbs 18, verse 13, we can show love. Proverbs 18, verse 13, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it is a folly and a shame to him. Ooh. So it's showing love by having the patience to let them, to hear them out, to listen without interrupting, instead of saying, well, you thought that was good. I got one that can top that, you know, and let me interrupt your story with my even better story, or however it turns out. So listen without interrupting. And so that's one way we can do that. And sometimes it's a habit, whether it's a person or a family, they have the habit of doing that. A second way we can show love is to speak without accusing. I put in here in parentheses, choose your words wisely. We can turn to James chapter 1 and verse 19. In James 1, 19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, but it doesn't stop there. It says slow to wrath. So don't get angry quickly. Speak without accusing. Choose your words carefully. Is a way to show love instead of just say you love someone. The third one on my list is use good judgment when being gracious. What does that mean? Well, generally we're told to give and don't be sparing. But sometimes you can bankrupt yourself too. So you have to use good judgment when you're being gracious. I know that let's turn to Proverbs 21 and verse 26. In Proverbs 21, verse 26, he covets greedily all day long, but the righteous gives and does not spare. In other words, doesn't withhold that which is appropriate. Now, as a high school student, I was in FFA, Future Farmers of America. And I was raised on a farm, and we were given samples of corn, a bag of corn, to experiment with, seed corn. And my dad provided a small field that I could put part of that corn there. So what I did was I doubled the rate of amount of seed per acre. Just doubled it. Set the planter and put down, instead of 14,000 plants per acre, I put 28,000 plants per acre down. What do you suppose happened? The yield was increased dramatically because there were more seeds. I didn't sow sparingly, and it was a greater reap. And the entire industry, and it wasn't just me that experimented with that idea of heavier planting rates, the whole industry went that route. Now it's common to plant at 28 to 30,000 plants per acre. That it wasn't common when I was a lad. So using good judgment, you're not going to say, well, I'll save a little on the seed here, but it's going to cost me more later. Let's take a look at 2 Corinthians in chapter 9 and verse 6. In 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 6. But this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. So when it says to give and does not spare, it doesn't mean don't use good judgment. How many of you have seen the beggars on the corners by the freeway entrance or exit? See them all the time. At least I see them a fair amount. And it's interesting. I see some of them. I saw one guy was very frustrated. You could see I hadn't gotten there yet, but apparently he wasn't having good luck. But he had a cast on one foot and he had a crutch. And I saw him throw the crutch down and then walk across the road on his cast toward the liquor store. So he was not happy that he wasn't getting enough donations from those who just read that the righteous gives and does not spare. So people are handing the money almost every time you go through, somebody's giving money. And then and I'm not saying there aren't people that aren't in a bad way, but for the most part, those are not the people that are on the street corner. So let's not mistake. Let's use wisdom when we are being gracious. So use good judgment when being gracious is a way to show love. And if somebody, I remember my brother said in his trucking company in Los Angeles, saw a guy rummaging through the dumpster at a McDonald's. And he thought, man, I feel bad. The guy's looking in there for some food in the dumpster. So he bought an extra sandwich. When he went in, he gets out and he gets the guy in the dumpster. He hands him a sandwich. Wasn't going to give him money. And the guy grunted and put it in his pocket and kept on digging in the dumpster. Don't know what the deal is, but a lot of those have mental health issues. So, fourth point I have on how to show love, pray without ceasing. In Colossians 1:9, we read this interesting comment by the Apostle Paul. For this reason, we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding. That doesn't mean it's a marathon and that you must pray until you drop over dead. And yet there are people that have this concept that pray without ceasing means you never stop. It means when you pray that you give focus and concentrated effort, and you don't forget those people. You're going to come back and you're going to do it again. You don't put an end target and say, well, I'll pray till Tuesday, and if that's it after that, you know. It says pray without ceasing, not on a continuous marathon. A number of years ago, some of you may have heard the message on the five kinds of prayer. I'm a believer in using your fingers. Five fingers? Well, most of us have five. One of my old bosses had four, but if we have five fingers and the thumb as a reminder to pray for people that are closest to us, the pointer finger for the people who point the way, the middle finger for those who have the rule over us, the ring finger to pray for the weak among us, and the little finger, don't forget to pray for yourself. But that's the last one, because people usually start out with themselves first because that's our immediate interest. But if we remember, the thumb is closest to us when we pray, so that's the people that are closest to us. The pointer finger, the ones who point the way, believe me, they all need the help as to get the right direction. The middle finger for those who rule over us, and there's not a lot we can do about those, you know, that all over the world, there are people that have the rule over us. The ring finger, the weakest among us, we'll always have the weakest among us, and they need our prayers. And, of course, the little finger for ourselves. So, as a prayer guide, we can use our hand, and it's convenient. We carry it with us everywhere. So, therefore, we can pray without ceasing, and we have the little reminder to carry with us all the time. The fifth point I have on ways to show love, and that is answer without arguing. Answer without arguing. In Proverbs 17:1, we have this interesting concept that that many of us perhaps may be all too familiar with. In Proverbs 17:1, better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. There's no peace in some households, and there are some people, they're unhappy. They're always quick with a snide comment or a sharp retort, that there can't be any peace. In fact, you probably know about the drama people. Back when I was in high school, there was always a table in the cafeteria in high school. Those were the drama people. You didn't want to sit over there because who knows what was going to happen. They weren't happy unless there was drama. And if there wasn't any drama, they were going to stir it up. And they were going to make sure that there was something going on. Let's turn to Proverbs 15:1. Proverbs 15:1. How do we handle the snide comment or the sharp retort? In Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Now, if somebody says something sharp and hostile to me, I hate to admit it. You know, my first thoughts are, it's something like, same to you, buddy, but I have to restrain that because that's not going to help resolve whatever the reason is. Sort of like the guy across the road from where the surveyor was working. He said, boy, the guy's got some kind of anger issues. He's mad about something. Well, he's carrying that forward in life. Doesn't help to argue with those people to answer it. It's just you give them a soft answer. You don't fall for their bait to get into an argument because they may be one of those drama people. In Proverbs 30, verse 33. I grew up on a dairy farm, and we would collect the cream, and we'd put it in a peanut butter jar. And then we would shake that jar until our arms fell off or we produced butter, whichever came first. And we would shake that. In Proverbs 30, verse 33, for as the churning of milk produces butter, and the wringing of the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. Well, we know if we shake the butter long enough, you can turn it long enough, you're going, or shake the cream long enough, you're going to get butter. And just like Ringing of the nose produces blood. One of my uncles said he was walking along a sidewalk, and it was fall, there were wet leaves, and he slipped and fell. And I said, did you get hurt? And he says, my nose protected the rest of my body. Down he went and got himself a flat nose out of the deal. So the ringing of the nose produces blood. So the forcing of wrath produces strife. So the soft answer, avoid the strife and be able to walk away from it. So so our fifth point was to answer without arguing. Sixth point, carefully sharing the truth. Carefully sharing the truth. That's a way to show love. If you see somebody that's violating the commandments, then we walk up, put our finger in their nose and say, I can explain this one to you, buddy. Here's what you're doing wrong, A, B, C, and D, and so forth. Or do we recognize a teachable moment? It's important to carefully share the truth. In Ephesians 4, starting in verse 15 or 14. Ephesians 4, starting in verse 14. That we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro, carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men in the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting. Verse 15, but speaking the truth in love may grow up in all things into him who is the head, Christ. So to avoid being tossed about by every wind of doctrine and by the deceit and trickery of others, we could consider speaking the truth in love. It doesn't say just speak the truth. Therefore, it says speak the truth in love with care, consideration, recognizing that teachable moment. Now, there are people that are carried about by every wind of strange doctrine, so we must be considerate and find an appropriate way to guide them into a full understanding of the truth. And there's an example of that. We have in Acts 18. In Acts 18, we are given the example of Apollos. Acts 18, verse 24, starting in verse 24. In Acts 18, 24, now a certain Jew named Apollos, born in Alexandria, Egypt, an eloquent man and mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. So the guy knew what he was talking about. Well, it says he could speak well, he was a studied, he was an educated person. Verse 25, this man had been instructed in the way of the Lord. That's a good news. He had received formal instruction, and being fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things of the Lord. Still sounding really, really good, right? And being fervent in spirit, so he had the desire. Fervent in spirit, he spoke and taught accurately the things of the Lord, though he only knew the baptism of John. So his knowledge was incomplete. But he was accurate for everything that he was said and was doing. He was enthusiastic. Verse 26, so he began to speak boldly in the synagogue. There was a certain level of assurance because he knew the truth. At verse 26, when Aquila and Priscilla heard him, they took him aside and explained to him the way of God more accurately. This is interesting because, you see, his knowledge stopped at the baptism of John. So Apollos' heart was right, but his knowledge of the truth was limited. It was incomplete. At that, Aquila and Priscilla then talked to Apollos, and they did so privately. They found the teachable moment. They didn't stand up in the synagogue and say, let me give you the what for on that one, buddy. One, two, three. You're missing this point and this point. No, no. He didn't get on the internet and explain it all to him in a public and bold manner. He explained it to Aquila and Priscilla, husband and wife, talked to him privately, and a man who desired to know the truth would then absorb that. So that would be point six is to carefully sharing the truth, recognize a teachable moment. Point seven, seventh way to show love, enjoy without complaint. What? Well, I'm going to mention here that speaking up about something is not the same as complaining. So when we read Philippians 2:14, it says quite simply, do all things without complaining and disputing. But we're reading it in English. Okay, so we have to look back. In the context, the complaint implies bitterness. So whining and accusing is different than inquiring as to why something isn't going as well as it should. So a question. So when we say enjoy without a complaint, well, yeah, I liked it, but, you know, this problem, and that problem. That's kind of a backhanded way of saying you like something if you're listing the things. So if you're going to love something and show love, you're going to enjoy without the whining and moaning and carrying on. In Numbers 14, verse 36, this is the time when Moses had collected spies to go into the land of Canaan. In Numbers 14:36, now when the men of Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him, meaning Moses, by bringing a bad report of the land. That's a complaint. They were not based upon their faith in the truth. They were whining and accusing, and Moses is, what did you send us here for? We're like grasshoppers, better we die in Egypt, and so forth. So that was a terrible complaining. And what did it cost them? 40 years in the wilderness, and they all died there. That was a big price. So when we speak of complaining, that means in a negative or disputing sense. Now, in Acts 25 and verse 7, we have another example. In Acts 25, verse 7, when he had come, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood about and laid many serious complaints against Paul. But it doesn't end with a period there. It says, which they could not prove. Sounds like hot air. They were giving complaints, negative aspersions about Paul, but they couldn't prove it. No, well, we just imagine it. It's just the way it is. So they were not speaking honorably or truthfully with regard to Paul. So they were complaining and not appreciating the truth that they did here. So number 7 is enjoy without complaint. Number 8, a way to show love is, I'm going to word this one, consistent trust in the truth. Originally, I have down trust without wavering. But I think consistent trust in the truth is a better way to say it. And we can read that in 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 7. And that's what we call the love chapter in 1 Corinthians 13. We read in verse 7, love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. It's a consistent trust in the truth that the end of the game, the end of the day, the end of our lives, that our belief and trust in the truth, without wavering, will give us what God has promised to us. So, eighth way to love, to trust without wavering. We trust in God, and we trust in the ability for God, or God's deliverance. The ninth way to show love is exercise the capacity to forgive. Now, some people are nonstop in this area. I put down in my parentheses, don't be stupid. Okay? Some people think you forgive everything all the time for everything, no matter what. It would be nice if the highway patrolman would have that attitude from time to time. But exercising the capacity to forgive, if we take a look in Colossians 3 and verse 13, we're told to bear with one another and forgive one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, you must also do. Well, it's interesting that forgiveness has a lot to do with the other person being willing to change and repent. And, oh, sorry, I'm not going to do that one again. And so that's why I say we have the capacity to forgive, that we must be prepared to exercise that capacity. And then the 10th way to show love, promise without forgetting. Ouch. Promise without forgetting. My subtext is to avoid building up expectations you can't or don't deliver. So if we promise something, we really need to follow through with it. And we're all human, and sometimes that always doesn't work. Let's turn to Proverbs 13:12. And Proverbs 13:12. And it explains what happens when someone forgets something. And I'm forgetful. I understand that. And I suspect at some point all of us have forgotten something. We've built up something, an expectation, and we didn't fulfill it. Proverbs 13:12, hope deferred makes the heart sick. Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it is the tree of life. In other words, when everything works out together, works out as you hope and expect, it's such a good feeling. It's like ice cream in the summer, if I were to tell the kids, right? Just something that's really enjoyable. But when it doesn't come to pass, somebody lets you down. That hope deferred makes the heart sick. It's, oh, man, this isn't working out. So let's remember to show love. We promise without forgetting, or refrain from the promise. That you don't that if you can't, and be realistic. So if we take a look, all of these things, we go back to John 13:35, which we read earlier. What did Christ say on the night before the New Testament Passover dinner, the night before he was crucified? By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. So these are 10 ways that we can actually put into practice to show love. Number one, we can listen without interrupting, meaning we can show us some measure of patience. Number two, we can speak without accusing. We can choose our words carefully. Number three, we can give without sparing. And then parentheses I have, use good judgment when you're being gracious. In point four, I have pray without ceasing, recognizing it's not a marathon. Number five is answer without arguing, meaning make it a soft answer. Number six, carefully sharing the truth. And in my subtitle there is recognizing a teachable moment. Number seven, enjoy without complaint, which means look for the good in everything. Number eight, trust without wavering, or as I've retitled it, consistent trust in the truth. Point nine, ninth way to show love, exercising the capacity to forgive. Parentheses, don't be stupid. And number 10, promise without forgetting. To avoid building up expectations we cannot deliver. So if we take a look at this time as we go forth from the days of unleavened bread, Jesus Christ gave a specific instruction on to love him and keep his commandments if we are to be identified as a believer in Jesus Christ. And what's the benefit to us? Well, the benefit is, as we read back in Exodus and other places, the mercy of God can be extended to us if we love him and keep his commandments. So we have that capacity to open ourselves up for God's mercy to us. And, of course, the benefit doesn't go just with us, but it goes to whoever we can help when we show the love to them.